Hello and welcome to the Analytic Show, the podcast of business through the lines of data science. But together, we'll dive into learning and sharing where various industries are heading and how data and analytics is at the heart of shaping business growth and productivity. Let's spark different ways of thinking about data and analytics that is relevant to you and prepare your business for future disruption. I'm your host, Jason Tan. I'm delighted you could make it on this journey with us. Hey guys, to continue to get support tips, techniques, and tools, and learn from the expert, hit that subscribe button wherever you are so we can keep in touch and continue our lifelong learning together. So, are you using your company data to its full potential? Take our embedded analytic assessment to find out your score. A leading organization like Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google have moved beyond dashboard and embedded data science directly into their daily business operation. With our 3-minute test, you will discover your potential in optimizing customer experience and revenue through embedded analytics. You will gain greater clarity, insight, and advice to embed analytics. Plus, you will receive customized results instantly. Find the link to this assessment in the description of this episode. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning.
Thank you for calling. How are you? I am good. How are you? Thank you for coming to the Analytic Show podcast.
All right. It's a pleasure. Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, excited to have you here. Now, given that we are in a podcast and is kind of a social media as well. I know you have won the LinkedIn Top 20 Voices in Australia Award. Congratulations.
Oh, that's very funny.
Do you know what was the thing that you do on LinkedIn that got you that award?
I think I used to do this crypto show, and I have this crazy sort of videos, little short videos that I put up onto LinkedIn, and I just did a lot of them and have a bell and all this stuff. It's a bit crazy, but you know, people liked it, and then I think that's sort of what started it.
That's good. And I just found out that a couple of weeks ago you launched a podcast, the innovation, I think something along the line about the tech innovation. Yep. With the MP. How has that going so far?
Yeah, it's good. I do it with Andrew Bragg, and he's a senator for New South Wales, and he has a different perspective, but he's a very business oriented, you know, person as well. And it's really good. I think it's really good. Yeah. We come together well.
I have been thinking about getting a co-host for my podcast as well. Perhaps I should try to look up to perhaps Scott Morrison. I'll see if I can get him to the podcast.
Yeah, give him a call.
As for the phone number, that's probably the trigger part. Now, tell us a bit more about your current role of the co-founder of Finder, and perhaps a little bit about Finder and also a bit of background about Finder. 70% of our listeners from overseas, so it's probably a good idea to give a bit of context about Finder as well.
Yeah, Finder is a fintech that really helps you save money and earn money, which is really cool. It's been going for 12 years now. I guess technically, you'd say we registered the first domain maybe 16 years ago. So, and then we really went full time into it in 2009. And we started comparing things with credit cards, mortgages, personal loans, and then expanded around the world doing that. And now we've launched this new application, the Finder Wallet, and that allows you to earn 4% on your capital. And it also helps you, automatically compare stuff. And you can obviously purchased cryptocurrency there, which is really cool. And then we've got a whole series of new things we're going to add to that and roll it out around the world.
Wow. So that earning money part that you referred to in earlier is about this find wallet where you earn the 4% of your capital. Is that correct?
Yeah, so find a wallet is really the new, you know, business inside Finder. There's still the comparison business there, and it's doing going really well. And you sort of the two businesses combined together now under the Finder umbrella.
Right. So how does the Finder wallet work?
Well, you download right now. It's only in our app, so you can download it. You can send money into it. It's just a normal bank account. You have your own account number. And so, you know, it's held by a bank. And then you can just with a couple of clicks buy, you know, Bitcoin or Ethereum, or you can put your money into our Earn product. And it's just a couple of clicks. Everything's very simple and extremely fast to use. It's really what we focused on is the beginner or intermediate user. That was really our mindset, is we just wanted someone who was starting out. And so it cuts back and removes all of that friction and all that, you know, complexity inside cryptocurrency and buying it. I think we've had a record, you know, we see people who sign up, go through the account setup, deposit money, and they buy crypto in 3 minutes. That's pretty, you know, I think that's a good sign that we worked very heavily on the user interface and the experience and just making it very simple. That was really the idea.
And I think one of the things that what I have noticed is the big four banks in Australia, or even including those banks overseas, they are starting to catching up in this whole idea of trying to remove the friction and try to make the better customer experience. So like what the Amazon or Netflix or Google or Facebook guys are doing. Part of that is using data and data analytics or data science. If without revealing any trade secret, trying to share with us, what sort of things do you guys do in terms of data analytics to remove those friction and improve the experience?
You know, I think we do a lot of, you know, data analysis on, you know, we have a whole series of data points we collect in terms of user flows, in terms of, you know, demographics, people who are using things. And then we do a lot of qualitative research as well. So we interview people and sort of try to mix that together. So you kind of see behaviors in the data, and then you're trying to give context of why. And this is really overall trying to, as best we can, inform us about what it is we should next do or change or upgrade or, and that's really, challenging, you know, sometimes I think to balance that out, to balance the data and the intuition together. It does work out. It's I guess a bit more art than science to some extent, because you're kind of using your intuition as well. And I think that's, you know, that's always been sort of my view about data is it's, you know, I value a customer insight the highest. So if someone, a customer who tells you something.
Correct.
And then, you know, if you can see that and attach that to a trend line that you can see, or some sort of, you know, some sort of analysis, and you can start to affect the change of that input,
yes,
then, you know, that's how you can, you know, make some pretty considerable changes and impacts to the product. And that's really hard to do. Like it is quite challenging because there's, you know, obviously there's sample sizes, there's random people and, you know, just things that happen, right? So it can really be quite challenging to sort of cut through the signal versus the noise. And I don't tend to, you know, just look at either one in any particular isolation. I sort of try as best we can sum the two together. I think that's just a normal practice. But you know, I think it's somewhere in the middle, and I tend to lean probably, unfortunately or fortunately, slightly away from the data as much and sort of straight to the customer, because I think sometimes not only when you ask a customer what do they want, they are probably describing something that is not, it's more of a frustration, or and sometimes it's actually their ego is sort of, you know, in the way of them actually describing truly what it is they are trying to do or can't do or don't feel comfortable doing. And it takes a long time to get to that insight. But I think if you can sort of use the guideposts of the analysis, use the guideposts of the customer intuition and insight, and then make your own, form your own judgment, and then, you know, experiment from there. And I tend to lean, you know, and encourage us to lean pretty much to more action and less analysis.
So that primary important. That is very, very important.
Because I think you know, I think more data points helps, and more insight from the customer, and eventually you get clear. I don't think any one particular analysis is going to be the silver bullet that teaches you exactly why it is your customer is using your product and what it is ultimately they're trying to achieve and what could make it better. I think there's a series of, you know, lenses that you need to go and put that through until you do, you know, like a Venn diagram, continuously color in the circle until you truly understand what it is that is colored in. You know, and I think that's a long journey in and of itself, but a good one.
I agree. I think hearing, you know, what customers saying, leading to what they're telling us, that is super important, because sometimes otherwise we spend too much about the data or the analysis, like you say, and forget about what the customer is telling us. And equally, I think especially when we are trying to create something new or something that they have never seen before, just like Henry Ford was saying, if I were to ask the customer what sort of how fast do they want, the code escaped me, they would have told me a faster horse instead of a motor vehicle. That is perhaps I feel like, especially in the newer thing.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Now, you talk quite a bit about the crypto, and I know that you are also doing something in the metaverse industry, such as these Mataza NFT gaming. Correct if my pronunciation wrong. How does all of this thing connect to your work with Finder in some way?
Well, I think, you know, crypto obviously is probably the key link in some way, shape, or form, but mainly it's things which I, you know, sort of two things. One, find interesting, and that are growing, and that are new areas that are expanding. Two, you know, that's a combination of sort of technical, financial, marketing, and, you know, in some way, shape, or form, those three sort of disciplines I enjoy. And when they tend to, you know, join together, then I'm pretty engaged and interested. And I think taking risks and trying new things, that they're sort of tend to be things I'm interested in. And that's sort of the area that in Finder that I sort of, you know, tend to naturally gravitate towards. We'll just naturally do it. I don't know. I couldn't say it's, you know, planned. It just sort of naturally happens that way. And that's just probably why, yeah, I just touch a lot of new things.
I think that is this whole idea where metaverse, NFT or crypto, to some extent, sometimes probably is a little bit like how the internet in the early 90s, where back then in the early 90s, the people who were in their mid-career were dismissing the internet. Likewise, where we are at now, people who are in the mid-career perhaps are dismissing all this thing, just like how we dismissed the internet as well back then. Do you think that could be the case, or maybe they could be right this time?
100%, 100% it is. It's it's repeating again. You know, it's a Cambrian leap in technology, and you know, a major change in how people like to pay for things and pay each other and pay for businesses. And I think it's happening. And I think it's way beyond. Yeah, it reminds you of the internet. It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same. Exactly.
How old were you when you first accessed the internet?
I think I was like 15, 16. Yeah, it's pretty young. that's not really that young, I guess. You know.
Yeah, for some.
I think about my children. They've always had the internet. They just assume it's always there.
You think the crypto and metaverse is already impacting the finance and banking?
Definitely. Definitely. I think, you know, I think there was a lot of companies that didn't get on board with, you know, I remember websites at the start. And all the work I can see that we're doing today, obviously it's a lot faster because you've got the internet. And when you didn't have the internet, that's different. But this is like a business. This is an industry that's built on top of the internet. That's like crazy. That's like next level.
Yeah.
It's like the internet is the railway line assumption almost. So you couldn't really have cars without roads. You know, you need to make roads first, and then you can make a car. You know, I think when I think about, I remember the internet and people when it first started to roll out and people building websites, and it took a long time for people to get on board, and people got excited when companies launched their website. It was really strange. And I think the same thing will happen. You know, I think a lot of banks are going to launch stable coins, like individual coins that they print and publish. And that's going to happen. The thing which I think should happen and I think will happen is a lot of these coins are going to get backed up by Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin's going to be massive. I think it's just begun. I don't think we realize how big it's going to become.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll back up all of our financial systems. It's like we should have been having digital currencies in the beginning of the internet, but we just didn't. And now we've got the internet. You know, if the internet was to start again, it'd probably start with digital currencies.
Now, I want to come back to the digital currency just in a second, but if history is any guide, and it reminded me, and I tried to draw a line, so try to draw a relationship or the relation between what happened back then versus now, is that back in the early 90s or mid 90s and before just the .com, you know, there was a huge number of internet companies and things like diaper.com, pets.com or whatever that .com, as long as that is a .com, it just got crazy valuation. Obviously, then we had the dot-com buzz, the bubble buzz on the dot-com. And then clearly, as I said, a lot of those companies died. But those who focus on the fundamental, rather than just because it is a dot-com, those who focus on the fundamental, like, for example, Google focuses on the search engine, whereas Amazon focuses on building the best shopping experience that it could get. If history is any guide, what we are witnessing today, it seems like it's going to repeat again. My question then for you is, what are the things that the company, whether they are doing the crypto, metaverse, or NFT, that they are focusing, will help them to survive when a crash happens or a history repeats itself?
Well, you know, there are some things. I think the thing about it with crypto, which is really interesting, is that it has shifted where the point of aggregation happens. You know, it doesn't just happen on the information layer. So, you know, a lot of the people who are producing protocols and on the protocol layer in particular and services, they're going to survive because people want to use them, they need to use them. And there are a lot of also very successful Web2 companies as well that will sit on top. And they have a point of leverage. It can be quickly disrupted, actually, to some extent, but it's not going to disappear. So the kind of points of aggregation have shifted, you know, like where the bottlenecks are and where you need to control. And I think that's probably the first piece of strategy that a company probably would want to learn about. And then adapt to. And, you know, I think there's definitely some leaning in and experimenting with this one. You know, I just think it's a, you know, you make mistakes, you learn from them. There's a lot of, you know, very new people coming in and learning. But I think they'll learn quick and they'll adapt and realize, you know, it's just a different set of dynamics, you know, just like it was a different set of dynamics of the internet marketing versus TV marketing or radio marketing or, you know, brand building. And people change and adapt really well. And some people don't, but that's, you know, that's on them. But I think, you know, I'm hopeful, I'm bullish.
Hey, y'all, I just want to give a quick shout out about this episode. Is sponsored by the Embedded Analytic Program at DDA. And the Embedded Analytic Program is designed for senior manager and executive in the business team who want to integrate data science into daily business operation and use it to drive customer experience excellence and revenue. And book unlimited strategy session for a full year and start embedding analytics into the business frontline. For more information about this program, please refer to the description of this episode. Now, let's get on back to the interview. Coming back to the digital currency, were you leaning towards about the digital currency issued by the sovereign country, or were you thinking about it will be some of them? I mean, it will be part of it, but also cryptocurrency that is completely supposedly independent, run privately, such as the Bitcoin or Bitcoin.
I think the two will exist together, and eventually, over time, you know, centralized versions and decentralized versions will come and go. And I think initially everything starts pretty decentralized and eventually has big clumps of centralization. You know, the internet saw that, you know, at first it was very decentralized and now it's become quite centralized. And I think now it's kind of going back to being decentralized again. Where people really don't trust these central venues as much. They want to go and find new things. They're fragmenting and, you know, I think that's the natural nature of any ecosystem. And then it might centralize again, you know, but just in different ways. I think right now we're sort of in this, you sort of got a bit of centralization and decentralization operating, but I would say it's a slightly, the decentralization part is much more bigger and has more money than the decentralized one currently in crypto.
Now, coming back to this one, how do you see that the crypto and metaverse is going to impact the finance and banking even more in the future?
Well, you know, I think we've already been living in metaverses and we've seen what happens when, you know, currencies in those metaverses play out. You know, World of Warcraft was a metaverse. Doom 2 was a metaverse. And they had different currencies. You know, if you're part of any particular computer game in some deep way, shape or form, you tend to have a metaverse because you're living in this digital world mostly. You have digital friends. There are people that I know digitally, but I don't actually know in person. And that's fine. That's natural and normal in today's society. And you feel just as connected that you know them intimately. You know, is that a metaverse? Probably is. You know, when I think of them, I just think of them as like one's a world of electrons, the other one's a world of atoms. And they have different rules and sort of dimensions about them. And I think they can both coexist. And I think they will.
And they will eventually intertwine as well.
Oh, I think they're definitely already talking to each other. Like, you know, you've got people who are neighbors, you know, neighbors used to talk to each other a lot. And people, you know, in sort of restaurants and communal areas to talk to each other. Now we're all staring at our phones, you know, and we think those friends that we carry around with us in our telephones are our friends. You know, we've cured loneliness with a glass screen. Which is incredible if you think about it. No one feels like loneliness is not, you know, when you have a digital friends, you can be anywhere and not feel lonely. And you can send a photo, you can have a video stream, a call, and you feel together. That's not to say that you're in the world of atoms together, but you may be in the world of electrons together.
Could that have a different impact to some extent?
I think it's fragments physical relationships. You know, it makes people less kind to each other because they don't need to be, less invested in their relationships of people around them. You know, I just don't think people are neighborly as much anymore where you physically live. Because you're not invested as much in that community, you're not as reliant on that community, and that's, I think, you know, that's kind of interesting. It's a change, but is it a change for the good or the better? I don't know, and I'm not an anthropologist, nor do I profess to be. So I probably not the best person to advise.
I feel like we have got a little bit philosophy in that area. Now, yes. Let's come back to that crypto metaverse in the finance and banking. So it is happening. It's going to happen more. My question next for you is, how are you using or how do you see the data analytics, data science, AI, machine learning is going to enable those two things together?
Well, I think they're already, it's already started. And I think it'll get faster and just become bigger and, you know, yeah, I don't think we're slowing down. I think we're speeding up. And I think, you know, we're not going to get less data. We're going to have more. and I think that you know, some of these things can be automated. Some of these things can be, you know, the data can say everything, and other things still require the soft skills and, you know, the interactions. I just think this is a particular area where in the beginning it's very technical and it requires a lot of, you know, fundamental infrastructure to be constructed. And then, you know, I think then we're going to start to see other sort of ecosystems and communities evolve on top. You know, but I think we're just very early, like we're just sort of getting the stable internet, you know.
I want to bring this into a slightly different direction, talk a little bit about the CDR, the consumer data right, and also the open banking, because to some extent, I feel like maybe they are interconnected more than we thought. Especially, I know that from my research is Finder also received accreditation under the CDR and open banking. Can you tell us more what this means for you or for Finder? Where are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to achieve with them?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting things where you take, you know, combine people's data with products and insights. You know, I think it's very hard to do and execute. But I think there is opportunities there, and we've been working on some of those. There's a lot more work to be done, and, you know, I think that's just a sort of an initial beginning, probably that area. So in the UK, I think write access, so we can write transactions, I think is, and particularly do payments. That's probably the key differentiator. In Australia, it doesn't really, it's just read only. It's not actually doing that much currently.
Yeah.
It's not as useful. When you can write, that's when it becomes useful. And I think that's what the change is needed right now to get a real focus on open banking. But right now, yeah, you can just, you know, data, the difference between data scraping and open banking is not much.
So would you like to share with us? Is there something that you can share with us about the what you're hoping to achieve with open banking on Finder? How do you think it's gonna help the consumer that you serve?
Well, I think in terms of as I said, today, I think reading transactions, I think it's good and there is insight in that. Mm. I think in the future, when you can write to it, you can then you can unlock really interesting things. You know, maybe one day you can automatically switch your account, or you can, you know, automatically transfer money to a, you know, in a more optimized manner so that your wealth is being generated automatically. I think there's a lot of things then become interesting. Right now, today, it's kind of like, imagine you could go onto a website, but you could only read from it. You couldn't actually input data back in. And I think that's, you know, when the internet was two ways, right? You could do two things. You could input stuff and obviously read stuff. And I think right now, imagine if the whole internet was just only read only. That's kind of like where open banking's up to.
Right. That makes sense. I see where you're coming from.
So there's not that much really today that is any different than screen scraping technology in Australia. In the UK, very different. In the US, there's no open banking. So, you know, screen scraping is really the only way to sort of go about that.
Do you believe the crypto is going to push open banking to be adopted more quickly in certain jurisdictions? Because to some extent at high level, yeah, achieve, they're hoping to achieve certain things. They share certain common goal.
I guess, yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting insight, like in terms of maybe banks will fast forward open banking because they want people to, you know, maintain and continue to use those services as opposed to getting new services which are already open. Mm. You can already talk to and they're already composable and you can put them together.
Yeah.
And access them in an open manner. Maybe, yeah, maybe that's where things might change. That's interesting. I do think that's possible. I just think the banks to think like, depends on which country, right? So in some countries, they're just going to skip open banking entirely and just go straight to crypto. In others where there's very deep seated and good operating banks with great technology, there's no real need to move quickly. Mm. And I think that's probably where the difference lies. There are a lot of countries and organizations that have a lot of, yeah, they don't have the infrastructure.
Mm. Apart from that, do you see in the world that you see, do you see there is a connection between crypto, metaverse, and open banking, like how they could intertwine together?
I just didn't see crypto and open banking being that connected because open banking is trying to open up something which was closed, so you know, something that's centralized. Whereas I think crypto is already open to a large degree, and it doesn't need it really. It's already open, which is interesting, right? and then you know, I think as you can get more and more alternatives to existing financial products through crypto, yeah, you're going to see people become less and less reliant on it. I think I'd bet on crypto over open banking.
You're pro crypto over open banking? Is that what you're just saying?
Yeah, I think I'd be long crypto over open banking. I think open banking is like it's a good short-term fix, but I think it's not a long-term strategic square.
Maybe when the right access in the open banking is enabled in more countries, perhaps open banking and metaverse could talk to each other as well, because whatever is happening in terms of the metaverse, when we use the crypto to make that sort of a financial transaction, could then be enabled by the open banking.
Maybe. I just don't, again, it's like you've got a legacy system trying to sort of patch on a plug to enable it to talk to it. And it's only, you know, in some places, you know, it's only a certain number of banks and it's only a certain number of feeds. It's not like everything. Whereas with crypto, you're basically fixing the entire root cause issue and you're opening up banking from the start. Like you're holding your own money, you are your own bank. You're getting, it's just an entire new paradigm, which I think is, you know, very strong. And I think it's got a lot of legs. And I think it's only just begun. And I think that's where ultimately we'll end up. No. I think open banking in 10 years' time will look like, you know, like a pager. Like some people adopted it, but most people just use a mobile phone instead.
Now, coming back to crypto and metaverse, how, given what you guys do at Fider, how do you see crypto and metaverse help creating a more fair and ethical landscape for the financial industry?
Well, it's really... it democratizes risk. It allows people to gain access to higher risk investments. Obviously, high risk is probably, you know, you can lose a lot of money, but also you can win a lot of money, you know. So there's a bit of a combination there. You know, and I think a lot of those risks and those assets and those investments were not accessible to a lot of people. You know, we all didn't get access to buy the IPO of Google or Facebook or, you know, and all the other companies, and we don't get access to buy into those. Whereas in crypto, we do, which is really cool and different. And I think it's changing things. And I think it's democratizing that risk and that ability to invest.
What would be the advice that you would give to the startup or the innovator in the banks, in the banking, in the financial industry to use crypto and metaverse for the future of the financial industry?
Start now. Yeah.
It's not now as in not the right time.
Yeah, now's the time to start.
Now is the time.
They already have, and you know, it's really hard to run a large company and make big change and innovate. So right. I have compassion for that. And you know, I think so. I get it, and I think they're doing, like, they've innovated in the past, and they'll continue to do it. I have faith that big companies are good at, you know, going where is needed. You know, they get there.
I think so. They certainly will get there. Even that there are so many banks in the world, I think there is a chance that someone will make a good example of how they get there, and the rest of them can have a recipe to follow.
100%.
Now, to wrap up these podcast interview, these are my two usual questions that I ask every single one of my guests. The first one is, what is your most important first principle?
Focus. Take one thing and do it really well. And then once you finish that, go on to the next thing after that.
I like it. That is one thing that I'm trying really hard. Second question. What is one book that you have read and thought it would have been better for your younger self to have?
So many.
Big one.
So many. I think How to Win Friends and Influence People. I read it when I was pretty young, I think in my 20s, but I should have probably read it when I was 6. Yeah. No, it'll work out. It's one of those things.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's one book that I probably have read. That is a book that I have read probably more than 10 or 15 times. Every time I listen to it or read it again, I pick up something new. I totally love that one. But I'm also trying to pick up different idea on the similar topic. What would be the biggest key lesson that you pick up in that book?
I think it's about thinking about the other person and going over and above to understand them, and then interacting and realizing what you can do in order to, you know, make a situation, you know, achieve a goal or create a situation that you want. It's about influencing. You know, we unfortunately, if you go back in time, we used to have you know, physical violence, slavery, and things like that, and you could force people to do things. But those things, those days have actually ended. In some places they're not, but most places around the world they have. And so the only way actually to get people to do things is to influence them. That's your last remaining tool. And I think that book helps that.
And I think that is so true, especially for the people like myself who do data analytics, where I used to and I probably still do quite a bit, where I think like an engineer, where I think that, well, people will be rational and people will do what we think that they will do, but the reality is we actually have to understand what the other party is thinking and what motivates them. That is certainly the biggest thing.
100%.
Thank you very much, Fred. Good catching up with you today to share your world of view about the crypto metaverse in the world of the financial service.
Awesome. Yeah, and thank you so much for having me, and thanks everyone for listening.
Hello. If you enjoyed this conversation, hit that subscribe button so we can meet again. If you don't, I'll be stuck in an infinite loop. So pull that part by clicking the subscribe and help me out. You can further support us by leaving us a kind review from wherever you are listening. At the end of the year, I will choose a reviewer to send a special gift to, and it might just be you. Look forward to seeing you here next week for a new adventure. If I can find my way out of this endless loop. See ya.